Hi, I'm Keith and the girls, Keith Malley.
And I'm Chemda.
Welcome to My Opening Line. We talk to your favorite comedians about their very first times on stage, what got them into it in the first place, and why after that catastrophe on stage...
So embarrassing.
...they kept going. I'm almost shocked every time. You know? I'm looking, by the way, at myopeningline.com, and I see some people who are on there. My annual stand-up show's coming up. I talk about my first time on stage. That was the first episode. Also, we talked.
He's surprised by his own stuff.
I'm surprised I kept going. I kind of do. I'm looking at Emma Willman, Jared Freed, Ophira Eisenberg, Laurie Kilmartin, Kevin Allison. Make sure you're subscribed. Gilbert Gottfried, Ted Alexander, Nick Thune, Jimmy Pardo, Bonnie McFarlane, Lucy Pohl, Carmen Lynch, Mike Lawrence, Key of Awesome's Mark Douglas. I think you get it. And ladies and gentlemen, today is another special day. And I'll tell you something. For this guy being so funny, and I don't know if this will make sense to you, but it makes sense to me. That's why I'm saying it. When somebody is so funny and they perform on stage, no matter what the room is like, at 100%.
Respect.
I respect that so much.
It's a guaranteed good time.
I think of your favorite comedians, and I got to tell you, if it's not their Showtime special, they could be leaning on the wall giving a fuck. This guy does not. It's the truth, ladies and gentlemen. Three-time Emmy winner for writing on Last Week with John Oliver. Here he is, Josh Gondelman.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
How you doing?
Great, thanks. How are you?
Good. Are you ever sad?
Yeah, totally. It happens. It happens.
You really are. You feel good to see, always.
Thank you. Likewise. I'm always so happy to see you both.
But that's what I was going to go on.
It's true. I know every appearance that you had on Keith and the Girl. It's like, well, how's this going? Oh, it's great. She's the best. He's the best. Life's the best. And I know that's usually the most depressed people because I'm one of them.
Sure. I'm pretty upbeat generally. Yeah. And like I have a lucky brain in that like my brain does a lot to keep me afloat. And then
that coffee doesn't hurt either.
No. Right? Yeah. I'm very caffeinated most of the time. And then I tried to do a good job of like, I'm at a point in my life now where I've like made decisions that have led me to people and places and stuff that I enjoy. So I'm very fortunate in that respect as well.
Break! Sorry, Josh. I got to tell you about Postmates. Postmates. Other than your absolute best friends, Chemda, who could you ask to bring you red wine at 4 p.m., sushi at 9, a breakfast burrito at 8 a.m.?
Ask my friend to just bring me this?
What am I reading here? No friend of mine is going to go... Okay, it's good to see you again. I just saw you at 4. It's 8 in the morning now. What?
Yeah, I mean, unless they're texting you going like, I am at sushi and heading your way after.
Then maybe I'll get the sushi at that time.
Yeah, and can you Venmo me right away?
I wouldn't be able to respect you if you kept giving me all this stuff. But anyway.
Yeah. Oh, I have a craving.
Yeah, Postmates is your personal food delivery, grocery delivery, whatever you can think of, delivery service all year round. Literally 24 hours a day. 365 days a year, Postmates will bring you what you want within the hour. No more trips to the store. You don't even have to know where the store is. Postmates will deliver anything to you, okay?
In fact, if I know where the store is, I won't call Postmates. I deliberately ask them to go to a place I don't know.
For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100.
That's so much money.
A free delivery credit for your first 7 days to start your free deliveries. Download the app. It's available for Android or iOS. It's free. Download the app right now and use the code OPENING. That's code OPENING for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Get anything you need, anytime you need it. Download Postmates and save with code OPENING.
I don't understand why somebody wouldn't do this.
I don't either.
It's free, and then you get money, and then you get things.
All right, back to Josh. Josh, buddy, congrats on your fairly recent marriage.
Thank you.
Where are we at right now? How long?
Just under 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is, I don't know if this is too much pressure for you guys, but you guys are the favorite in the comedy.
No.
Oh, yeah. I mean, close is maybe Mike Lawrence and Adina.
I was going to say Mike and Adina.
But
you know they don't talk. This is fantastic what you have going, at least from the way I see it.
Thank you.
I mean, we're adults now. We know who the fuck knows. You could have had a big fight last night. And what are you going
to
say about it?
Right. We're always surprised by people's divorces. So we look forward to yours.
I don't know. There are some that aren't that surprising.
That's true. There's some that is like, finally, you're my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
Like, how were you guys even together?
Yeah, what made it to date two? Like, how did you get to date two?
Like, who has such a beautiful penis in this movie? I don't know. Something's going on. Somebody's getting something good.
But I will see, Josh, whether it's on Conan or it's in a room that some friend asked him to perform at and ends up the microphone's not working and there's five people there. He doesn't half-ass it. He doesn't sit next to you and go, tell me about your day. He's performing as if you came out for a reason. And I really do appreciate that. You remember the very first time you were on stage, whether it's as a child or for anything?
Yeah, so the first time I think the first time I was ever on stage was when I was about seven. I was like a chorus
member. He's so honest. He was probably like seven and a half. And
right. I might have been seven and a half. Not to brag. Yeah, yeah. But I could play seven. So I could play seven. I could play eight. I was very versatile back then. And I had the hairline of an eight-year-old.
What was the play?
It was The Music Man.
Okay.
And so I was just in the chorus. You know, I was singing in the big group scenes. I was one of the kids that they were scammed into playing in a marching band. And so
you sing? Because I was in chorus, yeah. But I when the concert came, I mouthed it because I was never paying attention.
You were the Milli Vanilli, of yes. course.
Yes.
I did sing. I'm not a great singer. I'm like a very medium singer.
Okay. Did you have to try out?
No, I think they needed extra children.
Okay.
Can you imagine a bunch of 7.5-year-olds?
I'm sure they do that. Oh yeah, it probably sounds horrible.
Excuse me, I'm gonna be really good at this.
Do you know that one year in chorus, they asked who wants to try out for a solo? And I'm like, well, my parents keep telling me I can sing.
Oh, boy.
They had to look at me like, what?
How old were you?
Old enough. Everything, all my stories are always old enough.
32.
Right. Too old to go watch this.
Yeah, check this out. I think at this point in my life, I know all the things I'm not good at so that right. when people ask me to do it, I'm like, oh, you don't want that the right. way you think you do. Like, but, hey, we need an extra for flag football this weekend. It's like, yeah, you still do.
Never that's told funny. Me. I have to fight the urge to go, if you think I could do it, I think I could do it. Let's sure. do this.
Well, that's what I'm doing. And there's something about, the performer side where, well, I was in chorus all the time. I could sing with the group. No, what's the point of that? I don't even know the songs. Do you want to do a solo?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I want to do a solo.
That I have the passion for. No yeah. other kind of singer.
Right. Up front. So I only solo. Right. I'm like what's his name? Who's the guitar player? Fuck.
CeCe DeVille, I always assume.
No. Always CeCe DeVille. Like the Joe Satriani yeah. of singing, where it's all yeah. solos.
Right, right.
It's just like end-to-end solos. But the thing Chemda said is really great, too, of like, if you think I can do it, I think I can do it. I like love that ethos, and I wish I had a little more of it.
I really think that's how I got anywhere if I'm anywhere right mm-hmm. now. It's just like I always had weird jobs. So I had I was performing at kids' parties for like all my 20s.
And like so, face painting magic.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, can you run these games at a junior high? And I go, you're paying me.
Right.
So, yeah, if you're paying me, I can.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it might as well have been a college. She's saying, at a certain age, they don't care.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, you say I can do what I do. My girlfriend says I can do anything. I told her, easy, watch it. Mm-hmm. Watch what you say. I'm going to believe you. Mm-hmm. And then what do we do? You know?
Everything.
You taking trapeze classes yeah. together.
You said, how did the play go, Music Man?
So I remember it being fine. I think it was my friend's older brother had like a big part in it. And so our parents were like, oh, they need extras. So me and my friend Adam were in it together. And the only memorable thing about like being in it was that everyone was very nice. Like all the other kids and adults were very nice. Mm-hmm. And then I was second in line in a part where all the kids, you marched along this like horseshoe extension on the stage that was like a marching band formation. And the girl in front of me fell off the stage. And I just remember being like, all I knew was go where her back goes. And so I had
you
to
kept, like lemmings. You all yes. just went one after another yep. falling.
Like, no, yeah. I dove off the, I was like
the GPS yeah, system that yeah.
I am Spartacus. Like we're all in this together.
Do you think for a second, like human nature says you pick this girl up, but then at the same time, everybody's staring at you and you have to keep, cause there's nothing weirder than that. Especially watching.
Show must go on.
Yeah. I think I was very show must go on. I think there were like three parts, right? There was one part that was like, look to see if she's okay, which I think I looked.
And let's hope.
Yeah.
But you're a kid.
I was so very small.
It's all on your face. Yeah. You know that. Like, and then you're walking, snot's probably running.
Imagine if it wasn't on my face, if I was just like, my time to shine, baby. I'm leading this line now. Right. And there was like a little element of that where it's like, oh, I'm the leader.
Right. Now. Like showgirls.
Yes. I was very showgirls at age 7. That was kind of my most showgirlsy era.
Do you know, does a teacher or a parent run up to help this kid and you keep going or you don't know?
I think, I mean, it was such
that was not like, his job to know.
It was such that like the, it wasn't just me that kept going. Like the whole play kept going.
Right.
And someone did come out. It was, and she was not hurt badly enough that they were like, oh, this is a bummer. We got to stop this. Right. There was like no bone exposed.
Right.
I think she just was like shocked at having stepped off and like, kind of fall into the, you know, it was only probably 3 feet off the ground.
Right. But she's probably only 3 feet off the ground.
So she fell her entire height.
Yeah, yeah.
But you'll see adults do it. What's coming to mind is, are those beauty pageants, but you know, somebody will trip and the person right next to him, she's not going to lose points at the end if she helps the woman up, but she doesn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. It's really awkward when you're trying to be Miss America, like, you know, Miss Congeniality, and you literally walk over a person.
Yeah.
Like that kind of, you know, no matter what, that's going to look weird.
Like Iverson over Ty Lue in the finals. Right.
But did you hear like cheerleaders are so athletic and so so into their game. I mean, they're so good at what they do and they're so precise that some girl lost a tooth on her way down. Like she got flipped, lost a tooth. Didn't miss a beat.
Wow. Well,
blood is dripping.
Oh, we'll act like it's not there. If I wipe my mouth, it's not part of the program.
I feel like miss a beat at that point.
Miss a beat.
Take a couple beats off.
I was in band and you would see these, again, didn't know the music, but I would see these, the baton twirlers. And when you throw the baton up, if you don't catch it, you're supposed to act like it's still in your hand.
Oh, yeah.
And keep going with it.
Because you're ruining the synchronicity.
Yeah, don't worry. Boom, I'm back. Synchronized again. And this time I'm not a jerk off. So they pretend to throw
art,
throw it up. And guess what, by the way? Now they don't even have to look in the air. They catch it every time.
Oh, yeah, behind the back.
They fake catch it every time. Fake drop it again. And then fake pick it up.
And then real pick it up.
And then real pick it up when you come back around.
It's really weird continuity issues that Keith has. It's like very odd.
What's so stupid? Of course I understand the show must go on. You're sick, you perform, etc. But let's not play some dumb game like we didn't see Miss California fall down right in front of you.
Yeah, are we still talking about 7.5-year-olds? Just making sure.
I'm talking about all ages. Okay,
get it's your not shit together.
He didn't. Well, they should have told him too. This is what happens if somebody falls off the stage.
Yeah. And there wasn't much I could have done. My first aid training was non-existent, and I couldn't have like reached down and pulled her back up like cliffhanger style. Like my musculature was also non-existent.
Person.
Yeah, yeah.
I would tell the audience, I acknowledge what happened, and then I'd keep going.
Hey, look, I'm not a sociopath up here. Right. I see there's just nothing I can do, and then just keep going.
But I picture like she would have singing lines, but I didn't pay attention. I'm like, okay, I'm in charge. The music man! The music man!
Just instead of letting her just freestyling.
Right.
Mama, mama, music man.
Or he just starts going, show must go on! Right.
They checked the tape, you pushed her. How old were you when you said, well, first of all, when you decided to do stand-up?
Yeah.
What excited you? Good stand-up or bad stand-up?
I was always excited by good stand-up. Like, okay. I liked stand-up.
Wouldn't that be weird if all of a sudden Josh Gondelman was like, you know what? I love watching people fall. And it started when I was 7.
Yeah, right. That's where it all goes back to. Yeah.
I don't necessarily mean you're watching bad stand-up and getting giddy, but I know comedians that are like, well, I can do this.
That. Yeah, that was, I don't think I saw really bad stand-up until I started doing it.
Okay.
And then I was doing bad stand-up. Yeah. And then I was seeing it as well from other people. But like, I don't think I went to that many, you know, there might have been an element, but in high school, I did like a couple little, like a friend would throw like a coffee house show and like someone who could barely play guitar would play guitar.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I want to do stand up. So I did that. And so I hadn't really seen bad stand up live. And then when I was in college, my freshman year, I guess I did see a couple of people that made me think like that had come through campus. Right. And not, excuse
like
me.
Like were booked on your.
Yeah. Not even that were bad, but that were like, there were like 9 people in the audience and it just felt bad. And I, you know, like it was, it was not a, Comedy Central special.
The production was. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, there's this level too. Like there's that other level. Cause until then I didn't like go to comedy clubs. So I'd only, it was all like, oh, you're doing a special or you're not doing comedy.
Right. How old are you now?
How old am I now? I'm 34.
34. Yeah. So Kenda and I were 43, 44. When to see stand up on TV, it was a to do, right?
It was rare, yeah.
I didn't have cable. Yeah, right. I had to easily be 18 in my own place to get an HBO special to see or Showtime or something like this.
Yeah. I mean, my first one was a tape and it was, I believe, Raw.
Right.
Or whichever one was first.
Yeah.
And then the next one was the other one. It was Raw Delirious.
Right.
So that was my vision of comedy.
Yeah.
Then once, like, you know, maybe my cousin got Comedy Central and I babysat there, then all of a sudden I started watching half hour specials.
Yeah.
Without knowing they were half hour specials. Just kind of like, you know, sitting there being told these stories that are, you know, and I grew up in a very conservative home. So they were talking about the stuff that was happening in reality without putting a sugar coat on it and making me feel better. Just like, yeah, that's fucked up. And now you're laughing about it. I see what's funny about it.
So big 10 years later, is stand up regularly on TV for you?
Do I watch on TV? I mean,
at the time.
Did you grow up with more accessibility?
I did. Like in high school, by the time I was in high school, that was okay. So that, I think it lines up perfectly. Cause I think right when I started high school, basically, was when Comedy Central started doing the Comedy Central Presents.
Okay.
So I remember like the Mitch Hedberg one was like a very big deal. That was like what I latched onto. Also like finding ways to, when they would re-air on Comedy Central, like Chris Rock's Bring the Pain special. Mm-hmm. And I would listen to albums. That's where I started with stand-up, was probably albums when I was smaller. Like
when they show a master like Chris Rock.
Yeah.
And obviously he's all bleeped out. Do you think bleeping has to be part of your stand-up? Are you confused?
I think I got the record, the role with this album that was like a lot of that material. Right. And then heard it was like, oh, wow. He says all the words. Yeah. I like remember thinking, like, I remember even when I was a kid seeing movies where the curses were bleeped out and not fully, not being able to fully put together what swear word went with what bleep. And, and
they were bleeping so much back then.
Yeah, that's
bitch,
true.
Bastard, yeah. Damn.
Ass sometimes.
Yeah,
and these comedians are saying how important it is to get every word right.
Yeah, bleep. Yeah. And I would go, I was so naive. Like I would see like Blazing Saddles on TV, on network TV, and they would bleep all the words. And I would think to myself, they bleep the farts.
Right.
They had they had horse sounds over the scene where they're at the campfire and everybody's farting.
Then just take out the scene.
Yeah. And right, exactly. It's not funny just to hear a bunch of horses. That's like, you probably watch that and you're just like, there are no jokes in this. Is just a dramatic scene.
Was there no humor back then?
Yeah. You couldn't joke around horses.
Right.
They get very scared. And I was very, again, naive and would think, well, they don't say all the words, like
right.
the words that I've heard rumors of people saying. And then an older friend was like, no, they say all of them. It's like, oh, whoa.
By the way, when Chris Rock, for example, would have Bring the Pain.
Yeah.
And the exact same material is on the album, but that's called Roll With This. Mm-hmm. Is that a trick? So we bought both?
I don't know. I don't think it was a trick, but I don't know why it happened. I don't know whether like HBO owned Bring the Pain.
The name, but not the material at
I
all.
I don't know like if he could do it another, because there were also like, I think some sketches on the album.
Everything that Keith can't understand is a trick until otherwise proven.
I feel
different.
That way. If I don't get it, I'm like, who's trying to pull one over on me? And they're just like, oh no, we're just out of avocado. And it's like, all right.
But then I see the worker eating avocado at a table in the back. If only, I'll tell you what, my whole life would be so much simpler if I could think I'm probably not being tricked, but I'm never proven wrong twice in a row. And so now I'm stuck with this burden. So when the very first time you go on stage, how old are you?
So to do stand-up, I was probably, I mean, I don't even, I only ever think about this when I'm asked this question, which is, because I don't consider it like when I started doing stand-up, but when I must have been like 17.
Guys, ask him this more often so he can think about it.
But, and it was at this little coffee house. And I remember like the first joke was just something I said to my friends. And it was like a very like Andy Rooney, like a sub, like if Jerry Seinfeld were just complainy and weren't funny. Mm-hmm. It's like that level of observation, which was I had been to a movie theater and the only sizes they offered are medium and large. And I was enraged, let's say, by right. that.
Sure. That
and,
gets my goat every time.
Yeah. And there was like a very loose bit about medium only exists as the midpoint between small and large, like what happened to small. And right. like,
so you're teaching them math.
Yeah, it's averages mostly. I'm kind of a
now the very, mean is different. Yeah, what you want to look
the
for
the median.
Is,
yeah. I'm very pedantic. That's I think the word that best describes my comedy.
You have a chart and everything.
Yeah, I'm didactic.
It's pedantic. Really more a PowerPoint, mm-hmm. but very funny.
Is it the second part? So that was like I remember from the first time, and I did it. She had two, and I did it.
She had two?
She had two. My friend Corey had two of these events. Sorry. Okay. And the first time it went like pretty well. And then the second time I think I did, I tried to like refine that set and did it to the same people essentially. Mm. And it was very bad.
Did you go, hey, remember from last time when you right. left?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You should do the same stuff
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
They still don't have a small.
Yeah. They still don't have a small. I'm doing it like it's a sequel. but yeah, that was like my first, that's the first joke that I ever wrote to do on stage for sure.
What did it feel like after the second time where you weren't riding a high, you have to probably sit amongst your friends and talk to them. And I, you know, after stage, you kind of need like 5 minutes or something. Your brain is
sure.
Kinda, so did you just sit amongst your friends? Like that wasn't so bad.
I think I remember being like, oh, I guess I'm not good at this. Mm. And that, which was like,
well, I tried.
Yeah. It was like, oh, this is fine. And like, it didn't go well, but like,
your friends say you did good. And then you're like, careful what you say.
I don't think so. I mean, maybe they did, but like, I remember, I think probably my friends were like, this wasn't as good as the last time. Oh, like, wow. I imagine they had said that. I right. like, don't remember their feedback, but that's like, I don't remember feeling like this was going to be okay. I will overcome this part. Right. I was just like, oh, well, this is the thing I did a couple times. Because I also had no concept of how to or where to do stand up other than these events. And I was like, well, the magic is gone at these. And I don't even know if for me, because I am bad at them now. And so I didn't even know if there would be another such like coffee house that my friend was throwing at this.
Why do you want your friends there when you don't know what you're doing?
It was, I mean, that was my only opportunity to do it. So I was okay. doing it in front of friends. I didn't know where else to perform.
So what made you start again? What made you do it?
I was, when I went to college, I had a friend who.
It's always these fucking friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, oh
bleep out my fucking.
They'll be like, was that a horse? bleep it out with a horse. When I went to college and then Dan Hirshon, do you guys sure, know yeah. Dan, right? So Dan was doing stand-up on campus. He was a senior when I was a freshman. And so I saw him and I was like, okay, somebody knows how to do this. Mm-hmm. And so I got booked to do, and we didn't really know each other. I would see him at like my improv group would perform where he was doing stand-up. And so we would see each other in passing and we had mutual friends. And then I got asked, I was like, had expressed interest to a friend and or booked myself to do an event on campus. And that went okay. And even at that point, I was like, well, I still don't know where people do this. Like it, I know.
You just want to get invited to bar mitzvahs and parties.
Yeah, that's
and
exactly. Or like college events. And so that the summer after my freshman year in college, my friend Joe, his name is Joe Smith, which I say freely because I think he's fairly impossible to trace because that's his real name. He was doing open mics in town. And then our mutual friends from growing up, like high school friends and some of my childhood friends, bullied me. They were like, well, Joe's doing it and you say you want to do it, so why aren't you doing it? If Joe can do it, you could do it. Because like
Joe must be feeling good right about now.
Yeah. I mean, if he, I think they just meant, they didn't mean you're as funny as him. They just meant like he knows how to do it. He knows where to go.
Okay.
Ask him. So that's when I started. I did my first open mic in Boston.
And that's when you really wanted to quit.
Yeah. But that is when I consider that like when I really started, because that's when I was like, oh, I can do this and then I can replicate it by doing the same show other times.
Or, did you find comfort in that? Because I think that's one of the things that makes me really nervous about stand-up is, you know, when you throw something off the cuff and it lands, it's a surprise laugh even to you. Mm-hmm. But when you stand there going, this will make you laugh, yeah. When I land, this will make you laugh. So the revising and the doing it again is what makes people nervous. But you like homework.
I do like homework.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like the
kids. Listen to this part.
I do like doing a thing and being like, oh, this worked pretty well. And if I cut out this part and if I add something here, I enjoy that part of it. And I like the idea of even just knowing, like, this is where I go to get on stage. So, like, if I want to go, this is the method. You know, I call ahead at this mic, and it was a bringer show, but you only had to bring two people, and it was like $7 a person. So you could usually drag two people in the city. And so it was, once I knew that there was that, I was like a lot more enthusiastic to do it, because I was like, oh, this is something I can practice and get better at, not a thing that I have to like wait until someone invites me to do and then maybe do a bad job.
How long until someone did invite you to do a real show when your career became a career?
So I think the first time I got paid was, it was like 9 months after I started. And it was
fast.
A college. Yeah, it was pretty quick. I think outside of New York, that happens a little faster.
Outside of New York, they value people's time.
And it's also, there's just like less of an abundance of entertainers. So like you being able to have like a loose 10 or 15 minutes is a more valuable commodity, just because in New York City, you go, hey, does anyone want to do 15 like anywhere in the city? And someone will be like, oh yeah, I'm a comic.
Right.
And you're like, what do you mean? I thought you're like a doctor. You're an MTA conductor. They like leave the train. Like, I'm just gonna do a quick spot. I'll be right back.
You don't understand the shit I've seen.
Yeah.
Now you're in college. You took college to be a teacher.
No, I was an English and creative writing major, and I went in thinking I was gonna write plays, which is a job for like 11 people in America.
Is it silly that we don't want to be wasting our lives, but at the same time, at 18 years old, you got to figure out what you want to do. It'll only cost you $40,000.
I think it is silly. I got like a pretty decent scholarship to go to school, and my parents were able to help out bridge the gap. So I graduated without a lot of debt. Like I was, by the end of college, I was like paying my own living bills because I had jobs and stuff. But when I went in, I had this scholarship that I think like between that and, you know, just talking to my parents about their expectations, it was a little easier to like, to be like, I'm going to be a writer. And then being like, great, dream on, dreamer. Right. Because that was the case. And they were I think they tried to make me feel like, okay, you can do what is best for you. This is like what we want. We want you to go the place that's the best. But I went to Brandeis in part because I got offered a substantial scholarship there that I was not offered at other schools, and was like, well, this will make my, I'm like so glad I made that decision now. It's like the maybe.
Man, what'd you get paid that first time?
I got $200 to perform at West Point, the military academy with a showcase. Dan Hershon was there, who I mentioned before. Joe Smith, a couple other, Dan Bulger was there. And
you were there, and you were there.
Yeah. No, it was great. I mean, it was like a lot of people I'm still friends with. And so it was $200, and I hosted, and I did okay, not great.
Right.
But I was like, I did this job. And then I think like the next time I got paid was it was like a youth hockey fundraiser that I'd been recommended to open. And I did 10 to 15 minutes, and it went not great. And I got paid like $75. That one was like, I was way over my head in terms. I think both of those were mismatches of style, in that my style was not good. and there was an audience there paying, or that had just assembled. But the West Point one, I think that it didn't have like the vibe of like people who were my age but had dedicated their lives to military service. I think it was just like a different vibe.
You're like, hi, do you guys like to read books?
Yeah. And they're like, we read book. It's called the Bible.
Does everyone else here like homework? Anyone?
Yeah. I mean, they're great at homework there because they have to be. They do what they're told.
Did you tell them that?
I did not. And then the second one was like,
you have to do what you're told. Now laugh.
It was a bunch of people with kids at this, you know, youth hockey fundraiser or whatever it was. And I was still, I think, to the people there, they're like, you're like, if my kid were a failure still, you know what I mean? Like it just, I like wasn't good enough to be impressive. And I just had nothing to say to like a bunch of adults who were raising money to like pay for their kids' ice time.
Right. Well, the money with college didn't sound like it was overwhelming. So did it make your parents nervous when you're 17? You're probably still at home. You try stand up for the first time. You're trying it in college. It looks like, did they get nervous about it?
I don't think so. I think like, because I was such a, I'm like such a homework doer, rule follower. There was never a thought that I was going to like graduate and just be like, I'm in entertainment now and I make $0 a year. So I graduate. And the only reason I brought up the money thing with college was just to say like, I'm coming from like a very fortunate place where like, I'm not starting from behind in terms of like, right. Oh, I'm trying to do stand up and pay off $30,000 worth of debt.
When you end up teaching preschool, mm-hmm. did that have anything to do with classes you took in college?
No,
it shouldn't. Because, I mean, what do you need to know?
Now,
I don't even know if they're on letters yet.
They are on letters. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, well, okay. You have to know that.
Yes. So, which I did. So I was an English major, so I guess that kind of counts. But I had been an assistant.
He knows when people go on letters.
I was an assistant when I was over the summers. My mom was the director of a small private, like, toddler through eighth grade school. And I would work in the, like, toddler pre-K or toddler preschool classrooms over the summers in their like summer camp program.
Okay.
So I had hours banked which you need to get like certified as an assistant. And then I took one community college class that I like paid for, you know, it was like probably $500 or $600.
That's so funny. It's harder to be a comedian than a teacher for the youth.
Mm-hmm. And so I did
well,
that.
Well, I'm in preschool. What do you got to do? I mean, I'm not saying those juice boxes are easy. I've taken stabs at them too, and it's been a mess. But it was
great. I mean, so I took that class. I did the hours, and then I was like certified and got hired very quickly.
Okay.
So when were you able to quit all the jobs and know that this is you're in comedy?
So I was there. I taught for 4 years in Boston, and I had won the inaugural Laughing Skull.
Oh.
Festival.
That's huge.
And thank you. And that was in 2010. It was very exciting. It was like the first time I was like, oh, I can do this as well as people from all over the country. Like this isn't just like a pro. Yeah. This isn't just something I can do. Like I'm getting booked around town because like I've been doing it, you know, for a few years here. So that was in 2010. In 2011, I moved to New York. I quit full-time teaching and I'd been tutoring on the side as well. Middle school. I'm high school and high school entrance exams and SATs.
Nightmare.
And so
okay.
I liked it. I didn't mind it.
Is that why people want to punch you in the face?
Yes.
Okay.
I think I have that disposition where I can just kind of like sit and like listen to kids be annoying. And then I'm annoying. But so I was still tutoring when I moved to New York in 2011. And then in 2014, so almost
tutoring people ago, for SATs.
For SATs. Kind of and like there I actually had way more because I have a lot of the people in the New York office for the company I worked for were like musicians and like economists that were making money on the side and they didn't like to deal with the younger kids. So I would get in Boston, I was doing mostly SAT, I think. And then in New York, I was doing like 13-year-olds applying for like prep schools because I was one of the tutors that was just like a slob who like didn't care when 13-year-olds were dickheads. So like they would be like, oh, we're just sending I got all the youngest clients basically because the other people were like concert violists and were like, no, I don't have time for some like child, like a baby being a baby.
That's the right attitude for a teacher. Very nice.
But
very nice.
I think they were really good with the older kids that they could like sit and focus a little more.
Just between us, you ever take somebody's test for a couple extra bucks, huh? Right?
Nobody I don't know that nothing. I was that good a tutor.
All right.
But we
So when did you quit?
So I quit in 2014, which is almost 3 years after I moved to New York, when I got hired to do I was a web producer at Last Week Tonight. So it was 2014. I did that job. And I got hired in February at the end of the month. And I quit like a week and a half, 2 weeks later probably, because I waited until my last student, that batch of students that I had, which I think was only two at the time, had taken the SATs, because I didn't want to leave them like a week before the SATs and be like, well, you'll have a sub session with like someone you've never met before.
That's so sweet. But I get it, but you started working with John Oliver.
Yeah.
Right?
So I'd started that job and then I tutored like one or two sessions a week for my first couple of weeks there.
Were you exhausted?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And I was doing stand-up.
What was it like to go into that space? Like, this is such a big deal. You're quitting your job. You're relying on the fact that even the show will get re-upped.
Yeah, it was exciting. I was excited. I didn't know what it was going to be. I think that was like one of the cool parts of it was that it wasn't a show that already existed. So I wasn't like, I wasn't holding myself to the standard of like, I think if my first job had been at something like, even at The Daily Show where John was coming from, or I'd have been like, well, I've watched this since I was a kid and this is like very intimidating. And I was still intimidated, but I was also, there was also an element of like, we're all still finding out what this is. So, and it was very exciting. And I think I kind of eased in by starting at this web producer job that I was, because I'd had some, I'd written a lot for the internet and I had, you know, I knew how to use social media. I was an asset to the show. And there were things that I could say that I could be very helpful at. And I, they were very kind and generous about, you know, giving me credit for
what's
that.
What's the story you're most proud of with John Oliver?
Yeah. Oh man. So I was there. So I wrote for the show for the 4 years after that. And there were a few.
That's the good news.
There are a few that I really, that I'm like super proud of. We did one about, transgender rights in I think 20.
Were you for them or against them?
For them.
Okay.
And it was like very, it was like largely about like stuff like the bathroom bills that were coming out. Right. And I was really proud of that, of that one.
Do you remember it?
Yeah. It was great. I mean, it was just like, it was like a long story about just these kind of legal mechanisms that are used to.
What was the proud moment?
Oh, I just mean like that, getting that show and like having that.
Having that be having the matter.
That, yeah, having that get out into the world. And like, I think people were heartened by it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it moved the needle in terms of policy at all, but I think there were people could latch onto it. And people, friends would tell me like, oh, I showed this to my parents who like wanted to be open-minded, but like didn't exactly have the language for things. I didn't have the language to teach them.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, that's really sweet. And then I guess one of the, I'm trying to remember this right. I did like a little like meet a graduate talk at Brandeis and someone had said like, oh, this kid that was featured in that piece, someone related to him is a student and it had meant a lot to them to see them on the show. And I was like, oh, that's like so nice to know that like I'm working on a thing that like brings joy and comfort to people.
It definitely, that show definitely helped explain a lot of things to me. I'm like, oh, in 20 minutes, I will be spoken to like an adult, but still kind of walked through this, which is a big deal, you know? And instead of me Googling things, you guys do all the work and then kind of spew this out for me.
And you don't make me feel dumb. You say, as we all know. Yeah. I'm like, we do all know.
Right. And so to me, like, and then you win an Emmy. Right.
Yeah.
So this is a big deal. You know, it's deep, it's emotional, but it's also funny and creative. What's it like to like win that Emmy, to go to the Emmys?
It was really exciting. So we the first year.
Does it feel superficial after all the work? You know what I mean?
No, I mean, okay. It feels very exciting and it feels that I don't superficial, I guess, but it's like apart from the work, it's just like a very funny and thrilling thing that's like, it could go truly. People say this and it's like, excuse me. But it's a cliche that holds. It's like an honor to be nominated. There are so many like incredibly smart, talented, hardworking people.
Do you guys have to watch what stories you do or don't do? Like, should we do a story on are the Emmys and Oscars paid for?
No. I think they would love to. I think John would find it very funny if there was some kind of like vast Emmy conspiracy to do it and then submit it to the Emmys for an Emmy. That feels like something we would get a kick out of.
Do you guys talk about who goes on stage if you do win?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's awkward, right? Like, I wouldn't know if to get up, but I would want to, you know?
So it was, I mean, because of just how the nominating, this is probably very boring, but because of how the nominating process works, the years that the writers were nominated, the writers got to sit on the, you know, on the floor. And then like, if the writers won, they would go up. And if the show won, it was just the top level producers that are nominated. So it was like a pretty clean line of demarcation.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah. So you're really genuinely winning the award on behalf of like what you did.
Yeah.
It was very exciting. Not just like, this show is great and all of you are involved.
It's very nice. But I think that's really nice too, because there are a lot of shows where like they'll win for something where the people that do a lot of work and Last Week Tonight was like this too. I just was not I happened to get recognized because there's an award for it, but like on every show there are people who are responsible as much as anyone for those awards that there's just like no way to recognize them, or they have gone unrecognized thus far. Like the
catering guys. Yeah. I got to eat.
The field team, there's no like best field production. You know, there's like director.
Oh my God. Josh is going to go into like being way too nice. We get it.
No, it's true. But like the graphics team at Last Week Tonight is so wonderful. And there's this just like, not a, like
if they gave you the mic at the Emmys, like, yeah. Oh, you guys, we're cool. But these other people,
say every time someone asks me like, who do you like? Who do you influence? I feel like I go on like the end of a rap song where you just mention everybody you've ever met, like as the beat rides out and I just like talk about people I know from childhood and like people who died. That's like what my disposition is. But I truly think that like, because when you said like this person's involved in the show, but they didn't, you know, they don't get a statue. I think that that's, they do that for a reason, which is like, it takes so many people to make a show good and anyone can make it bad.
So with all this, you get along with the staff, which is not always this, not always the case, and you're winning Emmys, and this is you don't very much get a writing job very often, and a lot of times the show doesn't get re-upped. Like so much is basing on this. Yeah. You're leaving the show.
I did. I left in November, at the end of the season. I think like a week after the season was I got the offer for my current job, which I am very excited about and very thrilled with. And it was hard to leave. It was like a wonderful, truly, the job changed everything about my life and career.
And you're able to say what the job is, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but Last Week Tonight changed everything about my life and career. And now I'm...
But you got to move on. Fuck them, right?
No, they're the best. It's so many people. I work in the same building. So I like run into people all the time.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, it's very funny.
Funny is another word for it.
Yeah. No, it's great because I mean, I'm on great terms with everyone that's still there. But
There's part of you hope. This next year, they don't win an Emmy.
I only if the place I work now does. I have no spite except for in the funniest possible way.
Right. Are you trying to get Josh to say something negative?
I'm just curious.
Good
no,
luck.
I'm nominated. I would be nominated if they're nominated. So I would also.
Well, the following
year. I would also win if they win. It's great.
Tell us about this job.
I'm a writer and producer at Desus and Marrow on Showtime.
How did that work out? It's so different.
It is so different.
It's different than you also.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think there are...
I would think there'd be very little white guys on that staff.
There are some. Mm-hmm. It's fewer than some staffs and more than I think some others. But like, it's...
You didn't, for like a resume, you didn't fake your ethnicity, right?
No, okay. I wasn't trying to...
To get into Harvard?
I feel like my name gives it away.
Right.
Gondelman. He says he's Filipino. We didn't ask if he was. He just said it. What was I going to say? Oh, it's great. It's really wonderful. And I think there are more overlapping points than it feels like on the surface. Like I think Desus and Marrow as a comedy partnership and individually as people and John Oliver have like a lot of, there are qualities that unite them as television hosts and comedians that are not as apparent from further away when you're kind of seeing like.
Well, like charming, smart.
I think they're smart.
Politically aware, but not like but not shoving it oddly in your face.
I think so. I think they all want to like do comedy that I don't want to put words in their mouth, but I think they do comedy. Let me say that.
I think you do want to put words in the mouth since you're the writer.
Yes, legally, that is my professional obligation to put words in their mouth.
Twitter that Josh puts out is from Desus.
I don't want to speak on their behalf, but I think one wonderful thing about both of those comedy entities and all three of those people is that they do comedy that's like super, super funny and like has a really good heart and
says something.
And and they say they're not – they say the thing they want to say and
they have opinions, but somehow like, you know, both shows have opinions, but somehow they're riding this really sweet wave of this is information. Mm-hmm. This is not just me trying to like push my agenda into this thing.
And it's, saying things. And I think it's not pandery. I think they present things like, I think that it is, you know, it's now Last Week Tonight is a very, it's like a, one of the shows that people know is a show, right? It's like,
and people get their news from there.
They're in, which is, that's, I mean, I will, that's a little scary, but
There are scarier places.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, yeah,
you guys are thorough.
you could be watching Laura Ingraham or whatever for your news.
You know, I don't, yeah, the, you know, Jon Stewart used to say that about The Daily Show. Like, welcome to the fake news show. Well, it's not fake news. You actually do more research than the news, and you would be embarrassed if you said something wrong, unlike regular news. I don't know why these shows aren't considered news. They are.
I think that speaks more to how bad a lot of news is than how good a lot of comedy is. But yeah, I think they say, like, what I was saying was, you know, they're in their sixth season. It is like now taken for granted that this is a show that exists and will continue to exist. But like when it started, I think it was like it was counterintuitive that they would be doing like 13 minutes on the death penalty week two. I mean, the joke that they made was, welcome to our second and final episode when they started. And I can say that like with a lot of admiration and love, because I was not on the writing staff at that point. And I like really thought, that's not an intuitive choice to make, is to just like go uninterrupted for this long on a single story. And I think but that's like what they felt that it would take to tell the story the way they wanted to do it, with like the comedy and the sincerity. And I think that Desus and Mara are the same, in that they're doing the thing that they want to do in the way that they want to do it.
Do you like the danger at all of going somewhere new? Because you don't even see Tom Brady going, I'm going to fuck around with the Browns.
It is, I think I feel, and maybe this is false, but I'm like very excited to be at a new place, and I hope to help make it, you know, to be one of the voices in the room helping to make it successful and have longevity. But like, I'm also...
Thank you, Miss America.
This new show
is
anti-transgender rights. Can you respect where you work and understand it's not even...
But it's... they are not, which is nice. Yeah, all right. They're like good, thoughtful dudes. And I'm like very psyched about it. And they express that in a super different way than John does, which I love. And I love that challenge. But I think like I feel very like... excited to be a part of it. Also, they're a known commodity and they have made a lot of television before. So I'm like excited to be a part of this thing that is like bigger and better than I am, as I was at my last job.
Whether it's comedy or writing or stand up or writing, if there was one piece of advice that you can literally give yourself, literally Josh, what would it have been?
I would say when I was doing stand up in Boston, while I was teaching preschool after I'd graduated, I like didn't write anything else really. Like I wrote a couple of like half-assed spec scripts and like until the summer that I left my preschool job. And then I started writing like humor pieces and essays. And I think the one piece of advice, the only thing I really think that I could have done that I wish I had done differently in my career is that I wish I'd started like or resumed writing things outside of stand-up sooner.
So not to lean on, well, I'm already writing.
Yeah, not to lean on, well, I'm already writing. Or like,
why is that such a big deal?
Because I think that like so much of the wonderful opportunities that I've had the privilege to pursue have been because of like my other writing stuff. And I think I kind of drove towards this idea of like, well, I like doing stand-up and I want to do stand-up, so I'll do stand-up. But I think that's partly because that's what was in front of me when I was living in Boston. There was not a lot of other show business infrastructure in comedy. So it was that, or I didn't see a lot of other.
So sort avenues. Of like look up and look around and see what else.
Yeah.
Like, even though you're pointing in one direction, make sure you're looking all around.
And I think like I set myself a little bit behind.
Hilarious, but okay.
I do
know. I know. We're asking you, so obviously you have to say, but you're such in a good place that it's funny to hear you talk like
no,
that.
Yeah, no, I feel like I've been, and I'm really like thrilled with.
Nope, you already said something negative somehow. I caught it.
No, I'll say it. I think about it. This is something that it is like an easy slam dunk answer to that question, because I always think about it. And even my parents were, when I was doing stand up, my dad, because I'd majored in short fiction in college and I wrote a short fiction thesis, and my dad had been like, oh, you're doing stand-up, but like, are you writing other stuff? And I said, you know, not as much. And he was like, here, well, what do you do? What do you have to do to like get back in that groove? And I was like, what I should be doing is what I've been told is like read literary magazines, find places that I think my fiction would be a good fit and submit them. And he was like, well, here's $40. Like, go get those literary magazines and like find the places that you want to submit to, because I think it would be a shame if you didn't pursue that parallel.
So I found a couple magazines for $10.
And then some pizzas.
Right.
But it was, I thought that was
really
like,
sweet.
It was so sweet and so generous and so like.
Is he looking to adopt anyone in their 40s?
Would you recommend to others to have
my dad?
Giving, caring, liberal parents?
Yeah, sure. I would recommend my parents. I would recommend my parents to anyone.
You're the only comic that would.
They're the best. I'm like so fortunate to have them.
Well, and congrats. It's,
thank you. But that is like that.
Don't rest on your laurels.
Oh, I don't have enough to rest ease. I'm a light sleeper. And I get anxious on any laurels that I have.
But that's what I mean. You know, you know the talent you have, listener, and you know what you're not exploring. I've been like that too, I'm sure, where, you know, okay, I'm doing this and there's nothing else I can do. I can only focus on this when obviously, you know. I'm going to watch that stupid Motley Crue movie on Netflix. Obviously, there's time to do other stuff.
Right.
I'm actually learning guitar. I used to pursue singing, and then I got into comedy, and it took up, you know, quote, all my time.
Yeah.
But now I'm just like, I always say, like, there's no way I could play the guitar literally 15 minutes a day. And I am strumming a fucking guitar.
That's awesome.
It's bananas.
And yeah, I think that's it. I think I was like, but I'm focused on this, and I have this other job. And I just like was being a little short-sighted.
It's honestly like dating the first person that you dated and getting serious and getting married, and that doesn't usually work out. It's like, why don't you also make friends?
Yeah.
Also make like a second lover.
Right.
You know, like
a second kinda, lover.
Yeah. I mean, you could break up with the first one first. I mean, be honest.
Oh, okay.
But you know, like explore yourself so that you know what you're giving to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that was our deep moment.
Yeah.
In here in my opening line, make sure you subscribe.
What's going on with that 7-year-old that fell off the stage? How's she doing now?
I don't know. Okay. We've never reconnected after that moment.
She resents.
We took different paths.
You sure did.
Imagine if I was like, and that was Amy Schumer.
You think she has like an It's a Wonderful Life moment? Yeah. Like, if I didn't fall off that stage, this motherfucker. I bet he knows he's not going to speak for all of them, and I bet he made an Emmy speech. Josh Gondelman is great. If you have a chance to see him do stand-up live, you do it.
I have an album coming out. Is that okay to plug?
That's very okay.
It's vinyl pre-sale is open now.
Ooh.
But it's...
you're so hip.
Very hip. That's what people think of when they see me.
They say about the crackling, but you really get the full range of your voice.
Yeah, it's just a warmth to my shitty voice.
He actually sings this album, so it makes sense.
It's all standard. It's me singing That's Amore 14 times.
What's the name of it?
It's called Dancing on a Weeknight.
Okay.
And it's out for real April 19th.
Okay.
And the pre-sales go up in a couple weeks for digital.
Congrats.
Thank you. I'm really psyched about it.
That's super exciting.
Thank you.
Yeah. So don't forget, what's the best place that they can find the information?
JoshGondelman.com has
it. And it's spelt wrong.
Yep.
Gondelman.
Yep. And or you could follow me on Twitter.
It's DEL instead of DLE, Gondelman.
Well, that should make it easy, all this.
And then and follow me on Twitter. I'm tweeting about it a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
And don't forget, we're the host of Keith and the Girl Show. So if you're subscribed to this, you probably will also like the Keith and the Girl Show. Follow us at myopeningline.com or keithandthegirl.com.
And now the closing theme song. What you just heard was My Opening Line. Please subscribe and tell your friends. Go to myopeningline.com.